Welcome everyone to the NIAC School District Board of Education meeting for Tuesday, September the 13th. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
My chair is on for the ledger.
Try moving, see if I hear anything.
I hope it's not me, but I'm definitely rolling on the cords.
All right. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. President, a couple of items. First off, what I'd like to do, it's after the fact, but it's important that we recognize this. I'd like to take a moment of silence. Turnout at the BOE tour, Board of Education tour of the schools. Is it this week's school stuff or the previous week? Oh, yeah, last week. Which was really wonderful. We had good representation from the board, and I see two of our building leads here, and I've got to tell you, I think we all collectively had a really, really good time being in the building, seeing things in action. It's easy, certainly before I became a board member, you think education is reading, writing, and arithmetic, you know, typical belief. And then you come on the board and you understand it's not that way, but it's not until you really go into the buildings and you see things in action. It's just amazing. And thank you for what you do. To the board, one of the things that I wanted to say, every year at the Dr. Montefiore's Superintendent's Conference, I usually go and stand up and say a few words. And this particular time around, I wasn't able to go. And I had no less than 5 people come up to me and say, we missed you this year. Now, I don't say that to toot my own horn and say, hey, you know, I'm going to conference. Why I say it is that our acknowledgement of our staff, of our employees, is so important to them. So when we do things like go on these trips, be there, it means so much to them. At any point in time, you just put in a good word and say something positive. It goes a long, long way. It's what I gather from the people. So thank you all. I can really come to thank you for being there every year practically. That aside.
You could get to a few schools in part of the day.
Yeah, so it's good. So just to encourage everyone that it does mean a lot to them. They need people on the board. So we could continue to make that trend whenever we have the opportunity. There was a football game on Friday. It was a wonderful thing here. It was a celebration of Wells Fargo and Red Mandana and the lots of things. Thank you.
hospital to look at some other options that they have.
Yeah, I just for the record, Linda, if you can just in the minutes reflect, this was, I think, the second consecutive meeting that the board president speaks over. I don't know if there's a subtle message in that or direct. In any event, just a couple quick things I want to just review. First of all, to report to the board that in addition to your time spent with us, which again, I really want to tell you that your collective presence really was very meaningful to the kids as well as our staff. But we really have had a very smooth opening for the new school year. And I don't want to lose that, you know, Kevin Heaton's staff, certainly along with Carlene, had a large challenge. You know, the high school, as you know, if you were up at our school the day before, the weekend before school was opening, we still had a lot of clutter with the construction of the roof along with the fields that were going on. And sure enough, on the day of school on Tuesday opening, it was, you know, the high school itself was really very presentable. We're still working on the contractors after off school hours are still working on that roof, as well as you can see the contractors out behind the field working to get the fields completed. Enrollments, and again, they tend to be still dynamic at this time of the year, so we'll probably know better what our true enrollment is going to be probably sometime in early October. But just in terms of comparison, this time of year, the last time of year, we're up in the plus column of about 62 students across the district. The biggest areas of growth is at the high school. We're now up to 994 students. That's up 55 from a year ago. At this time, middle school is where we've seen the largest decrease. They're down about 41 students. Liberty is at its all-time peak in terms of its enrollment. They have additional 23 students, so they're at 44, 45 and counting. Valley Cottage is up 20 students at 452. Upper Nyack is up 5 students at 433. And again, I can share with you that we believe that will be changing. The district did experience a fairly good size kindergarten class this year. Last year's kindergarten class at this time was just a little over 201 students. This year's class is at 220. So there you can see some of those. And it's pretty much as predicted. What we are looking at, that kind of gentle little increase in enrollment. The high school is going to continue to grow probably another year or two. It's the seventh grade class, that's a really smaller class. As they grow up, we'll start to see a little bit more of a leveling off at the high school itself. And I have the overall. So overall, in the district, we're at 2,987 students. That is excluding our out-of-district students, which you could probably add another, I don't have the exact count, but it's probably about 70 or 80 students that you can add to that. So we pressed it over the 3,000 mark in terms of students itself. I would also just encourage all of our parents to attend all of our back-to-school nights. Our elementary schools will be held Thursday, September 15th. Middle school back-to-school night will be September 22nd, and the high school will be also on a Thursday, October 6th. And finally, I sent to the community yesterday to the board an update on the lead testing and the recognition that the state of New York, I believe, is the first state in the country to have a bona fide lead testing policy that will mandate that schools test their water supply every 5 years. I also indicated in that letter that at the time when we did test those 200 some odd samples around the district, it was done in a lack of state guidance at that time. It was done according to the EPA protocols of 20 parts per billion. When Governor Cuomo signed this new law just recently, it lowered it or set a standard of 15 parts per billion. As a result, even though it's very unclear whether or not the district needs to go through this protocol, we've taken a very proactive posture and have identified two sources of water that were previously tested that were under 20 but were above the 15.
Because it's very often a new direction. some of the students that benefit from the program. There was a high school review, and there was a junior high school review, and there was a high school review about some of the outcomes. Of course, it's not working for me now, but I think it's worth noting. Proactive prevention answers the question, do they realize they cannot be replaced? How do you answer that question when a teen asks you that? What if it's your own child and it's the seventh time they've asked? And so at the time, these folks were not, this couple who started this organization had no background in this, and then they started this huge organization around prevention. I'll come back to this at a later time as far as the comments, but I think it's worth sharing. So for right now, that's my report.
Thanks very much. Jen Marashina.
Thank you. Actually, James, since you brought that up, I would just like to add on regarding suicide prevention that one of the, I had heard, listened to a speaker a few years back when I was at a regional PTA dinner, and her son had committed suicide, and the message that she was sharing, which I will share today because I try to remind my kids about this, she felt like the most important thing in suicide prevention for teenagers from her perspective was kids knowing that they are the ones sort of listening and hearing what their friends say. Your kids become teenagers, they're not always talking to you,
right.
They're talking to other kids, and that if kids ever get sort of some sense that maybe something is not quite right, that they really should find a trusted adult, a parent, a teacher, a guidance counselor. Her son had sort of said something to his friends the day he committed suicide. He said he was running away, yet he gave them his last $50. And they knew that seemed odd to them. Why would he give away his money if he was running away? They knew it sounded odd. They just didn't think to share it with an adult. And unfortunately, that boy committed suicide. So since you brought that topic up, that's my message.
Thank you. I found a quick comment, if I mm-hmm. could just. This was from the high school student. The assembly today changed the way I look at things. I have contemplated suicide for 3 years, and I just go through depression where I don't want to talk to anyone. I used to think that the world would be better off without me, but then I heard that I cannot be replaced, and that's the acronym for this organization. I know there's only one me, but I just thought, why would anyone care if I was gone? The assembly today changed me and wearing the bracelet, because they've given out 55,000 bracelets. That's part of what this organization does. It makes me feel stronger. I hope one day I can make someone else feel strong like the way the assembly and this bracelet has done for me. And that was a high school. The junior high student said, I'd like to start off by saying what you're doing is amazing. That is such an honor to have heard about your program. When we left the auditorium today, I saw the look on people's faces, how they looked, and they changed. I've received numerous emails when I go home from school asking what the website was and where to purchase the bracelets. I was shocked on how effective your assembly was today. When people saw you setting up equipment this morning, they moaned and said it was going to be another boring assembly. When they left that room, they had learned that they can do something and that this is no ordinary bullying assembly. This is an amazing, inspiring, and beautiful program. And I give a million thanks to. And I like to get student feedback on stuff like this, because I think that's the real answer. When you hear from students, when they're giving their perspective on something, and so much of, and I shouldn't say so much, let me clarify that. Some of depression and some of these horrible outcomes have been, not always, but have been the result of some bullying. So I think there's a tie-in sometimes, and I just thought I'd share this for the benefit of the district. Thank you.
And James, if you would share the information about your bike ride with us, that would be great.
I will.
It's this Saturday, right? Is that
the
one?
The walk is the 17th, and the bike ride has already started, and people are doing it kind of individually. But yeah, I will. I will.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank
so the rest of my report was just about school starting, and I finally got to be part of the tour because Holly is now in kindergarten, which starts not as late as nursery school typically started. So, I just think it's a great start to school. And now I've got kids in all levels. We've got elementary, middle school, and high school. So getting good feedback from everyone. Upper Niac, of course, the largest population there is. So everyone's out there. Mr. McCord is smiling every day. Meeting everyone. It's great. Casey, my middle schooler, keeps giving me excellent feedback about we started cross country. Cross country is wonderful. His music. Technology class is great, fairly new addition. I feel like I'm getting so much communication. Texting and Spanish
those going here, essentially, it's those going into.
Thanks for the moment of silence. This is the 15th anniversary of September 11th, and the memory that I have of our school district, because our kids were still young, was how protective the teachers at Valley Cottage were. And they locked the building up, and one of the things I remember is someone showing up to make a lunch delivery in a truck, and he wasn't the usual driver, and they wouldn't let him in. Nope, not coming in. We'll take the delivery later. It was a strong statement on how protective we are of our kids. A brief moment of personal privilege to talk about Jen when she's talking about it's nice to know where our kids are going. I just wanted to announce over Labor Day weekend, one of our high honors graduates, Noah Mark, was married in California. To Katie Hobb, yes, to Katie Hobb of California, and there was one school board member and one district employee that were there to witness the event. We can assure you that Noah did the district proud. It makes me proud to be a part of this board, and know it's great to see India sitting at the end of the table. This district turns out great people, and we saw it in California, and excited for the year that. Will produce another set of great graduates. So we're looking forward to a great year.
Congratulations.
No more wedding bells.
Trustee Bender.
I'll go last. I'll get the honors. There's been a lot said, so I'll try to be somewhat brief and not so repetitive. I will say I did dance a little bit with back to school. Three young kids going back to school. It's a lot of coordination, but pressure off the household. Summertime can be a little bit crazy when you've got three under 10, or three under 11. So I did dance a little bit when they went back to school. I didn't appreciate it that much. I did participate in the tour, which I thought was great. Many thanks to the building administrators for having us. It was great to pop in on the two kids in Valley Cottage who were not expecting to see me, so I thought it was good to see the reaction on their faces when I popped in there. It was a little bit different, I understand, than some of the reactions that other folks may have gotten if they had popped in on their children.
Rub it in.
So they seem happy for that.
That's okay. You're going to go to middle school. High school too.
Yeah, no.
Enjoy it now.
Well, to be fair, you're not as bad.
Didn't get a chance to finish before the end of the things we can see all the games start. Looking forward to back to school and getting before we break the teaching to teachers and sit down and see what we do. One thing I did want to mention last this week. So I think the Hall of Fame ceremony is the 29th. There's another event taking place on the 29th. I am going to opt for the channel instead. For those that aren't in the Valley Cottage family, there is a wonderful woman by the name of Patty Coulter, who is a person who is for those who are interested, it was posted on social media. I'm not a social media guy, but it was brought to my attention that I felt the need to share that with everybody. Nurse Patty has been there for Jake's 5 years, and she's helped Madison quite a bit, and I'm sure she'll do the same for Luke. So if I can do anything to support her and her family, I'll do it in a minute. So if you're interested, please let me know. And that is my report.
Last but not least.
Thank you. Well, I don't want to be too repetitive, but I will say that I do have documentary proof that on the building tour, my son hugged me. Lee Sabatelli took a picture and sent it to me. So, yes. I mean, I thought it was kind of intrusive for the board to show up the first day of school, but it's really, I'm talking to the two administrators who are sitting here, it's a blast for us to come and see what you guys are doing, and yeah, we do feel the palpable sense of energy, and yes, selfishly, I do always check on my kids and register the reactions. So, and this time I think, honestly, collectively, we're keeping score. And I do think I won because I do have a picture. I mean, you don't have the picture of Jake.
The hug hits the high five.
Okay, so I just want to. But anyway, and with respect to 9/11, I just want to say this. You know, I was down there the day that that happened. And I do not like to remember that every single year. I basically try to avoid New York City if I can on 9/11, and I've never gone over to the World Trade Center site. I just don't want to relive that. But with all of this stuff that was going on with Wells Crowther, I thought to myself, okay, I'll turn on the news Sunday morning. And I happened to turn it on as they were doing COX. So I watched them read his name. And it was good, because I was like, you know, now I have, like, I honestly, surprisingly, didn't know anybody personally who got killed that day. I mean, there's a lot of colleagues in the insurance business and lawyers that I knew and stuff, that people that were down there that did. But this is probably the closest personal attachment I have to that. And it was really kind of amazing that I turned on the TV right as they were about to announce his name. So, yeah, I think that was meaningful for me. And again, we just have to, I guess we do have to keep it in our collective consciousness. We can't just block it out. And we do have to remember and support people who really stood up. And I started doing some of the reading of things about him and stuff on the website about him and the different articles. And it's really amazing the sacrifice that kid, that 25 years old or so, made for all those people. So, yeah, that was great. And that's my report.
As you said that, I learned to measure about a year ago. I moved up to the offices and I was sick for a while. So, I'm going to the floor and out my cafeteria to look down. There's this wonderful view of the people. And I never had the courage to go down and walk around. And my son went from down to the observatory the other day. And he wanted to go find what his parents. So if it's not easy to find without trying to tell you where it is. And it was just so moving. Like, he just felt so good putting a name to a face. It's almost like looking at a person. That's not what it is. It's almost like, if you cross me out, and what's beautiful, their names are like, so it was wonderful. It meant something to him because he's heard so much about wealth. So whatever we can do to keep this alive, the things that wealth do, I think it's great for something like us to help to keep that going because it does mean something. All right. Thanks, everybody. All right. Dr. Montesano, any responses to citizens' prior proposals, questions, and concerns?
No.
Okay. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns at this time?
I think somebody signed on the sheet.
Oh, can you have a sign? Is it pinned to the sheet? Is it there, Kevin? Sorry. Anything on it? Anne-Marie... Oh. Oh, okay. I thought was your signature. Like, wow, that's cool.
Well, you saw it. You have to come up now.
Yeah, now you've got to say something. Well. Welcome, Emery. All right. So I guess no proposals, questions, or concerns from the community on the workshop item today. Huh? Okay.
Yeah, see, one workshop item is the set of district goals for the 2016-17 year. I'm just going to give you a few highlights. The board, I presented the draft to the board several weeks ago to give you enough time to peruse. Just simply state that there's a lot of thought and collection of data that goes through the formulation of these goals. That includes certainly our administrative team, our leadership team, some of which was feedback from the surveys and from the forums we had done the year before. So the goals themselves really center around 7 specific areas that capture 36 individual action plans. So I would suggest to you that they're rather ambitious. We do try to define goals that are not necessarily based upon completion within a school year cycle. It's really what you can do. Some may take a number of years. As you see, those of you that have been on the board, each and every year you see us focusing on curriculum, and each time we're building different levels of curriculum through Dr. Gregory and her team to ensure that our curriculums remain relevant. But this year they encompass technology, professional development, student learning, curriculum and instruction, facilities, community engagement, district operations, and policy development. Earlier today, I had the opportunity to sit with Indigo to kind of review a few things because there's a number of these goals that, in my mind, will directly impact our high school students. And I know in speaking with Indigo, she's going to have a specific interest in ensuring that our students, and you'll hear from her, she collected some feedback from kids about some of these areas. One of which is the issue of class ranking and the selection of valedictorians. And we intend to create a committee to kind of study this issue, look at our surrounding high schools and what they're doing, look at some of the articles and some of the information with regard to this topic. I'm not going to belabor it tonight to go through those. But ensure that an issue like this is obviously we don't really want to impact those students that are directly in the pipeline now. But certainly going forward is something I think is really worthy of a board level discussion at some point for your policy. We are, if I recall correctly, the board had an interest based upon some of the discussions last year about looking at this whole issue of start time for the high school specifically. And you had a number of people address you with regard, and I know you've read a lot of articles yourself about sleep deprivation and what some options we may have that may not provide a financial burden on the district, but also perhaps be able to do something different with that. Again, we'll be looking at a committee, collect some data in interest of the parents, because obviously they're the ones that also have a lot to say about something like that. Also be aware that start time, specific start time, is listed directly in the language of the NTA agreement. So that's something we'll have to, you know, give consideration to the teachers and, you know, their representatives as well with a process like that. We are looking at peer mediation program for the middle school. Another, I think, exciting high school program is a lunch and learn. This is through the efforts of our conversations last with Dr. Geller from the hospital, another NIAC Rotary. This will be a kind of an informal program that would be available to students that want to attend voluntarily during their lunch hours, brown bag lunching, and just bring speakers in about various careers and, you know, what are the rewards of that career, you know, what's the educational preparation, why did you get interested in that, and hopefully we'll create those kinds of things. And our new director of guidance will be working with us on that. So, and the final one I'll mention, which is also part of what's on the board agenda tonight for action from the for the new teacher agreement, is working with NTA in developing a professional academy to be able to utilize the very rich talent of our staff to be able to teach others as instructors, as well as be able to offer more accessibility for teachers in service credits or perhaps even gain college credits right here in district, particularly those areas that are directly focused and tied in to the goals of the board, the goals of the district. I know one of the areas that the board is very interested in is the whole issue of cultural awareness, diversity training, those kinds of issues, so developing those kinds of activities along with a number of other things. So I'm not going to go through the rest of the details of them, but I certainly open up the floor to the board with any feedback. And if there's a level of consensus, I would, even though it's not listed on the action agenda, you know, would request the board consider approving those tonight if we think we're in a position, you know, the board is in sync with us, just simply so that we can kind of get these committees rolling, get things started before, you know, waiting another period of time. So.
Thanks, Dr. Montesano. Before we go around and consider them, Dr. Montesano, for the benefit of the public, put together an executive summary when he presented the goals. And there were some things in here that I'd like to call out that I think I want the board to really focus on. I really want our community to know successful schools do not happen without a coherent clarity of vision. Quality schools do not happen by accident. Everyone owns the district goals. We're the leadership team. We own this together with Dr. Montesano, who put it forward. But I hope that everybody feels that we own these to the extent that we support Dr. Montesano and the building leads and the entire school community, really, in being successful at these goals. A couple of other things. What I just said, that it's executive leadership. We're charged with the responsibility to provide the highest quality education. Our opportunities for success are strengthened when we maintain open and trusting relationships and place a better tomorrow for our students as our uppermost priority. I just thought I'd call us out. Thanks very much, Dr. Wilson. I thought those were very profound words. So what I think we'll do is, we'll go, rather than go person by person on all of this, maybe we'll go section by section. And if you've got comments or anything to say in that section, we'll go through that section. To Dr. Montesano's point, if there's any amendment anybody sees, we'll discuss and then take that forward, all right? So the first one is technology. Dr. Montesano, sorry, on the technology one, there was this rationale sitting at the bottom that had nothing to do with the...
That was actually, I had put a template together from a previous, you can see from 2012.
Yeah, yes. I saw that,
I neglected to take it off, and...
You just wanted to test if you were reading
it. Has,
right?
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got big question marks.
We all highlighted them.
All right.
I was waiting
Thank
for
you.
Somebody to bring that up.
All right. So we'll just go around. Damon, any comments?
No, I had to... I had the same comment about the rationale, although I looked out of place, but I was updating the years as opposed to looking at the rationale.
Right.
But anyway, no, it just seems like the only comment I had was it seems like we're a little bit lighter this year on the technology enhancements. It seems like the goals from last year is a little more robust.
Actually not. Just as one example, we did get an influx of funding through E-rate, and this is really, I think I sent some information report about this through Mary Ellen Leidecker's efforts. And so there was a large investment into the infrastructure. There's some additional cabling. There were some new switches and things. Not anything glorious that you will see, but it's certainly going to help us with you know, the rate of speed and things and adjustment like that. I can provide a list for you, but I do know there, for example, I don't know the exact number of carts that we, of Chromebook carts that have been infused in the elementary schools, which is new, which is part of our rollout for the problem-based classroom training that's taking place with some of our elementary teachers. So there's a pretty good amount of new technology that's going in. If you're familiar with our Project Lead the Way program, we did a presentation for the board, it was sometime last year. That is a large infusion of technology. We have biomedical engineering this year at the high school, aerospace engineering, some additional 3D printers and things of that nature. So that's taking place. We added another layer of courses to take advantage of that Mac lab. So we have additional students that are sitting for courses in that area. It's in here someplace, but we are working, I think it's maybe under facilities, working with Inspire NIAC Foundation to work on designs for the middle school to add a computer graphics lab. That would be another ambition. So, you know, I'll share with you also this year is in particular an important year for technology, primarily because our intention is to work through the technology committee, which will then be extended to get some feedback from the school community at large. You do have available to the district this $926,000-some-odd from the Smart Investment Bond. And, you know, this is going to be a one-time opportunity to really do something exciting with, you know, with technology and its place on the instructional side of the ledger. So I would suggest to you it's an important year in technology, as well as the fact that there has been a lot of, you know, a lot more additions than we've had. Maybe it just hasn't been communicated.
My point was I just didn't see it in the goals piece of it. It seemed like this was more of an assessment type, which is fine if we're
well. What's happening is that we have a consultant working with us. Anytime we go through a renewal of a curriculum, and while technology itself isn't a curriculum as a standalone, but is really designed to be integrated across, you know, all of our curriculums, it's really part of the instructional process. We do a kind of like an audit, if you will, of where we are. You know, what does it look like in the district? And we do try to use this as a very objective, rather than my perception or the principal's perception or even an individual teacher's perception. But what does it look like? How is technology being used? And it's interesting, the year before I came to the district, the Board of Education had brought in some associates to do such a review. And it's amazing where we were then to where we are now, but yet that report that we have of this consultant of kind of taking a look at the district really represents that, you know, we've made a lot of advancements, but you know, one of the things we always look for in any kind of rollout of programming is articulation. And articulation meaning vertically, so that as we begin with the youngsters as kindergartners, what does that look like as they go forward, but also horizontally, so that as a parent, we can assure you that regardless of where your child attends, what second grade, third grade, what middle school teachers they have, they're going to have a common level of experiences. And I'll share with you that the report that we have of this review that was completed at the end of last school year is that we're not really very strongly aligned with that. We have pockets of teachers that are very adept with the use of technology. We have some, no fault of the teachers, this is really to me something internal about our, you know, what staff development we make available. I think some of the commentary we got from the elementary ranks was they kind of feel like I was the fifth of seven kids and I never got a new shirt. I always got, you know, my brother's, you know, hand-me-downs. And I think there was kind of a sentiment in the elementaries, are they really getting the best of the technology or is it all going to the high school? You know, so there's issues that we have to, you know, take a look at. But my point is we want to take a very true picture, an authentic picture of where we are now, then develop the vision of where we ought to be. And that's the next phase of this, is really taking this committee out to see other, you know, I think I sent something to you folks over the summertime. One of the areas that we're focused on or looking at is, and I mentioned this to Indigo, and I think she agreed, The high school media center, which I think, if you look historically, I think Trustee Mark would share with you that it was originally designed out of the second floor of that media center, so it's kind of woefully inadequate just in terms of its physical size. So it's even more important that we're very efficient with the space that we have. And it seems, just based on the commentary I'm getting from administration, from D. O'Hagan at the high school, is are those stacks of books really utilized, you know, as an important function of the high school? Or can we take that space, and we're thinking about looking at this Z Lab concept, mm-hmm. which is kind of like a three-dimensional kind of world for kids to kind of explore, or a maker space for kids. So there's a lot of ideas on a planning board. Now it's a matter of, you know, this is where we are. We certainly have needs in aligning our professional development and experiences, getting that articulation across the district along those ways, and then also being smart about that investment of that funding. So that's kind of what's happening, and you know, that's why it's a focal point this particular year in that fashion.
Thank you. Sure.
Just a comment. I know that we did a comprehensive upgrade to our wireless capabilities throughout the entire district, if I recall. Did we not? We upgraded all of that.
It's actually part of the bond referendum. We had made some initial investments, but the bond referendum included additional wireless hubs, I guess they're called, and so that there's, you know, it's much more, it's another issue with staff have reported to us prior to that, that there's
right.
places they can go that are not reliable. There's also upgrades on moving to a Cat 6E cabling.
That's what I was
increased bandwidth.
Referring to.
Those yeah. kinds of things. So those have been completed.
And we still have those, we still have those individual technology supports in each building. I know that each
the liaison, has, yes.
The liaison is yes. also, yeah.
Yes, there are.
Okay.
Well, I had noted that I wanted to know how much of the bond was spent on technology upgrades and what was the smart investment bond, but apparently you've answered both of those questions. So I'm good. Thank you.
Sure. I'm good. I think everyone covered anything I was going to ask. So. Okay.
Just a little question. They look great, but you're expanding the technology committee? Is it a plan to...
Well, we have a technology existing committee that's going to be doing a lot of the initial work. Part of the requirement of the smart investment bond is that there is some community representation with whatever plan we submit. So when we get to that stage of that phase of that is when we're going to be expecting what is denoted in terms of expansion.
Got it. And you'll do like a call out to the community or have certain people in mind to...
Yeah, I mean, normally when we do that, we've done it a variety of ways, like the bond committee that we, the pre-bonding committee, we kind of sent out, you know, to a variety of sources and email blasts and posting if anybody's interested, contact us, and that's kind of how we did it last time. I do know that we, even from the bond itself, we had a number of people on the committee from the community, not employees of the district, that had extensive technology experience that were very helpful to us in terms of reviewing that portion for us.
Yeah, it just sounded good. I'm sure people would be interested in being involved in it, so sounds great.
Jim, the only question here, I had present the committee's findings, and you didn't have a target date on that. Is it going to be within the school year? Is that
yeah, absolutely. I am hoping to be able to present to the board a smart investment bond plan. I'm hoping sometime in January, you know, in my mind. Mm-hmm. The overall plan probably will come to you towards the back end of the school year, one of the meetings. I have to go look at if it's on our planning or highlight agenda or not, you know, where I put it or not. But I do want this committee to get its work wrapped up. There may be reasons why it's not completed, you know, but I'm hoping that it'll be submitted so that, you know, if you ever have seen our phases of, you know, curriculum development, which I'm kind of considering this, our phase, each phase kind of is a year. So phase one is the review of the program and program development. We start working on the written piece of what it's going to look like, what are the training needs, and then the third phase becomes the implementation of it. So that's typically how we try to work the cycle.
And the smart investment bond, is that something we have to, like everything else, we have to apply for that? We have
we've
a plan
we've,
and we apply?
Through Carlene's office, have done the preliminary work for it. It's your money, in essence. So they have already pre-allocated based upon the formula, the way they distribute the Fredo state funding based upon community wealth, property wealth. Mm-hmm. So that's where that, and your population of your students, so that where that, that $926,000 number has come from, the state has indicated to us that is what you're eligible for. So the next phase is to provide an approvable plan to the state, because they do have certain kinds of parameters of how the money can be used. And that's what we're going to be working on with the committee to get it into a submittal form, and I will present that to the committee, to the board, prior to it being submitted.
Thanks much. All right. So I think we're set on the technology goal on that one. Professional development.
I have no comments on the provision.
Yeah. Oh, wait, I've got mine in the wrong order.
Oh, no comments, I guess, on that, yeah, section. I just printed them, sorry. Jen?
Okay, wait, hold on. We can see where we were at. No, I thought they looked great. I mean, I was so excited, I guess, on this part. No, it just looked wonderful, Jim, that you had, you have the anti racism workshop in there, the in-service course introduction to Spanish and Spanish Latino culture is, like, such a specific goal. It just looks great. So, thank you.
The one question I had on that point three as well, professional development involving district stakeholders in the area of cultural awareness. These mandatory for staff, or do we can't mandate them by agreement?
Well, they could be. You know, when we have superintendent's conference day, as an example, or whatever, you have the ability to assign the teachers to attend workshops,
okay,
provided that it's in the teachers' or administrator work day. You know, you have the ability to do that. The rub always is, and you know, Wendy's here, so I know she appreciates this. There's always so much time you can take our teachers out of class time, and we have so many different initiatives that they're constantly, they're fighting for time as it is to have time with their kids. So you have to be sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. But we do have things like Superintendent's Conference Day, and those are done. And obviously, we want to include our staff in terms of getting input as to what the needs are. We don't want to bring them into workshops that are not relevant to them. But you certainly have the ability, and off hours, and this is really one of the ideas of the Professional Academy, is to make it available for things like in-service credit, which incentivizes teachers that are looking to move across your salary guide to work with us after school hours, for those kinds of things as well. So it would be a combination of things.
I think this is great. I think the investment in professional development is probably one of the greatest investments we can make in this district. It's only going to improve our teachers and it's going to help. And this whole business about the Professional Academy, I think, is great. And the potential involving Maya College with their education department up there. We have a lot of people, college level, that are as a resource that we can tap into. And they've obviously expressed an interest in helping with us on that. So this, I think, is just really noteworthy and something to be proud of as far as
we have a course with Niagara College that's being offered to all staff on October 21st. It's connected to the Most Likely to Succeed reading. We have Dr. Mazur coming from Harvard University, mm-hmm, who's in our auditorium. Mm-hmm. So that's an example of it's a one-credit course for teachers that want to, if they're interested in getting college credit. So. Mm-hmm.
Can we come and get some college credit, mm-hmm, too?
I was like, is that open to the
public? Yeah, well, actually, how much the board pay, the district pays the board members already? We'll just increase it by twofold.
No.
Really no comments. My questions were a little bit about the Professional Academy. It sounds great. About the elaborations.
That would be a genuine collaborative effort with the teacher association.
Yeah, I think the Professional Academy is a really out of the box idea, and I think it's great.
Just over the last couple of meetings, we've talked at length about the undoing racism, so I'm glad to see that it sort of weaves its way into the goals, and it's really now sort of this formal objective.
And I could just give you a quick update. Lisa has been hard at work talking with the folks. They're recommending that as a first approach, recognizing that not all of us can necessarily give up that particular weekend. They're steering us away from the idea of doing a separate one just with school personnel. And I don't know the rationale behind it other than to ensure that you really get a good, you know, all of us get a good exposure to not just issues that are related in our hallways, because obviously our kids and parents live outside of the school as well. So what I think we're going to do, and I'm actually going to bring this up to the administrative council tomorrow, is make it available, see how many people can actually attend that one in October. It is a large commitment, I'll just show the time frame, mm-hmm. but you give up all of your Friday night, all of your Saturday until mm-hmm. like 6:30, beginning at 9, and also I think until like 3:30 on a Sunday. Yeah. So it's a very large commitment of time. They would be open to doing something outside of that, beyond that, but that's, I just want to give an update of what, you know, what the initial feedback we got from the folks that run the workshop.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Mustafa. I think we're good on that one. Student learning. Jamie, do you have a couple of questions?
Student learning. It sounds like we do some sort of a conflict resolution at the high school already, right? Is that right? So.
Well, you got a lot of conflict. I'm not so much resolution.
Yeah. So trying to extend that to the middle school. I mean,
another board member had brought it to my attention as well. The peer mediation. Peer mediation concept is, I'm not sure if that's the one you're looking at. The first one?
Yep.
Yeah, it's really a program that is designed primarily for pre-adolescents. And the idea is to train students themselves in conflict resolution strategies, and they then work with their peers as trained, you know, mediators over kind of minor issues, disputes that would not then go to the administrative offices, but try to get them resolved. And at the middle school level, you tend to get a lot of those social issues of things. High school level has not really demonstrated itself to be very effective. It's a different age level, different stage of development. Kids don't tend to respond as much to that. We are looking at some other possibilities up here as leaders, you know, some other, you know, leadership development types of things. But resolving conflict at, you know, with teenagers is a little different than it is with the middle schoolers. So that's the reason why it's focused on middle school.
Okay.
We had a sort of a conversation around this one, and I like this one because it's an area of focus that I had somewhat passionate about. I like the I really like the idea. Or the goal, I should say, of when you mentioned the I had it right in front of me now. So, the social emotional component. Where is it?
That's probably going to be found with curriculum instruction under guidance, I think.
Yeah, that was that not in this one?
No.
That's not in this one. Oh, okay. All right. Then the only comment I had about this is where it's mentioned. Under college prep, no, it is on this one. College prep and mentoring program targeted to Hispanic/Latino females to increase the rate of immigrant families, especially first generation college students. Program will focus on college awareness, college aspirations, college readiness, and successful access to higher education. And under the actual proposal, it doesn't target Hispanic/Latino females. The proposal that's part of this goal. It doesn't state a specific. So, did you want to align?
Well, yeah.
The proposal with this, or?
This particular item is goal, which is I'm not sure it's going to even get off the ground for this particular school year. Is our intention.
Okay.
This is the one that's connected to Angelica Perez, mm-hmm. and there's a need for finding a funding source.
Oh, okay. This is different.
Operate
okay.
Because
okay.
she does have a particular skill set that okay. would kind of make this thing come alive.
All right.
And her intention is to have a cohort of Hispanic-Latino females in particular. However, she also would be willing or would make incorporate the whole college admissions and preparation process and make it available to others. So there would be some activities that would be designed for all high school students, but a lot of the focus would be specifically on that particular population.
Okay, thank you. No, this is very good. I really like the idea of the peer mediation proposal. That was it.
Great.
Yeah.
The only comment I had was in your lunch and learn section when you're talking about utilizing the resources of community members in Nyack Hospital and Nyack Rotary. What about your Board of Ed? Because I would love to come in and talk about, well, okay, I can talk, come in and talk about being a lawyer, but if anyone really wants to know about insurance, I could do that too. Like, how do you be an insurance adjuster?
No,
we're going to
be taking that course. And it was kind of listed as a hospital because it kind of evolved our conversations with Dr. Geller and his stuff last year. But, you know, clearly any levels of career preparation that we can expose our kids to. One of the things I mentioned in the interview we want to do is kind of survey the kids to get a little sense themselves as to what areas that they may have an interest in and try to attract a speaker. So if insurance comes up on that,
we'll see how many people default to the insurance industry. It's amazing. So let me just say,
to give them a chance to get through, no default insurance. No need to go from that, right?
Are you
Are
you allowing board volunteers for the SOAR program? I'm just curious.
I can put you in touch with Adele. That's the gentleman.
I've met him. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. I know who he is.
And again, I just want to also, with that one, that's also contingent on special bullet aid.
Right,
and
okay.
There's still some speculation. Actually, Brian Burrell has been involved
with
well.
You did mention,
if
yeah, there's a timing
fiscal
issue.
Cycle,
yeah.
And we may have to kind of tone it down until we can get the funding aligned.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I do know he's looking, you know, he's been looking for mentors, so I can, if you'd like,
I just send me an email or send him my
sure, contact. Absolutely.
I thought it looked great again, Jim. I mean, I just think you have such a good focus of continuing some of the things that you already started, Fresh Start and Walden Terrace, that whole, you know, portion under two, and then adding new things. And it's just, I mean, I think everything that you've got in here, you've got to focus on sort of our populations that maybe are traditionally the groups that might struggle, and then you've got things for kids from all different backgrounds. So I think it's great. Thanks.
I'm just going to piggyback on James and say I'm very interested in SOAR. And,
as a mentor?
As a mentor, so you can forward my name along as well.
Yeah.
And everything looks, like Jen said, looks great.
He's really good. You know, it's funny, Jen, you should say that because I actually circled the every up here. And I went through and I said, okay, the first one focuses on early teens. Then we've got the at-risk kids. Then we've got the African-American mm-hmm. black males. They've got Hispanic Latino females. We've got the lunch and learn for general high school students, and then special ed at the end of that. So, you know, we talk a lot. We always say, or I try to tell people, make sure they understand, you know, we're not just about people at any one end of the spectrum. You know, we really are about every kid. And I think this goal in particular, I was really pleased about this. I think it's really targeted and fantastic.
I appreciate it, and as all of us recognize, right now these are words on paper.
Yeah.
And it's really going to be, we do have such a strong leadership team and really committed people. We have some wonderful staff that are, you know, doing tremendous work at, you know, just at Walden Terrace as an example of this, or Linda Papalarda with the Efficacy Institute and the commitment that the staff has. So that it's going to be rely upon, you know, a lot of people to, you know, to bring all these things into
well, we've had such success doing this, but,
we
you
have,
know,
yeah.
I can't see this failing.
No, I have all the confidence in the world. I'm just letting you know that it's, you know,
it's on paper.
We appreciate all the latitude, but I'm just saying that until it happens for us, as you know, it's just nothing more than a piece of paper.
Well, part of that comment, it took a long time to get these even on paper, so I think that speaks volumes.
One last question I had, the peer mediation, the personnel will be middle school committee, who will that be? Staff members?
This is another area that Lorraine Long, the director of guidance, is going to be directly involved in, certainly Dave Johnson, and there will be some kind of committee of middle school staff to kind of look at this whole issue, guidance counselors at the middle school in particular, social workers, those kinds of folks too. Again, explore the research, look at various programs, adopt the program, look at, you know, the focus of implementation of those kinds of things.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jim. Curriculum and instruction. T-Rock, your turn.
Curriculum and instruction. TMI, sorry.
Got it. So we move on in the intro, team.
No, I actually, this is the one that has the CPR in there. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. again, nothing to add other than I will piggyback on the comments that I've made. This is just great stuff for staff and really, really good. Just let me check one thing. I thought I did have a question here. No, we can move on from me. I'm sorry.
You can.
Wrong section.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. All right.
Thank you.
Just one question. I forgot to put this one up. You know, and I might have asked this, and you may have answered this already, Jim, but the course in financial literacy, is that part of an existing course?
Yes, it's been incorporated off the top of my head. I almost want to say economics. I don't. Is that? But the idea behind it is that all of our kids are exposed to it as a part of their high school graduation experience. You know, we want them to have some grounding in the basics of financial literacy.
Yeah, but so it's not just part of economics.
It's a basically like a unit. I'm not sure exactly how much time.
Okay.
You know, that's going to be. Incorporated with at this point, I honestly don't remember off the top of my head, but it's not a full course, you know, like a whole year course kind of thing.
Yeah, if you find out at some point, it's just one of those things that
sure.
I think I saw it somewhere else, and I keep sort of wondering. I feel like one of my kids might have even said recently, "Oh, it would be good to learn about that," and it might be Abby, who's just a sophomore. So just curious, where they.
Just from parent to parent, there's no greater gift you can give your child than understanding financial literacy.
True.
Yeah. My kids are pretty frugal, actually.
Mine still won't. They're still on remedial coursework on that stuff.
Jim, I had gone through this, and where we had the review and planning to develop the K-12 guidance curriculum, I just put a big yes, an exclamation point, and tick, tick, tick. So.
That's one of the multiple year. Yeah, it's going to take time.
Yeah, no, but again, to James's point, the fact that it's here and we've got someone in, this is tremendously exciting. I did have a question. There was a last piece on review and planning around special area curricula, examining current implementation of drug and alcohol awareness. Now, we're only doing this for 9 to 12. So what about the DEAR program in fifth grade?
Yeah.
What are we doing in middle school?
No, that's what's happening is, and again, Dr. Gregory is really responsible for this area, has done a tremendous job of moving this district across these various stages, across all of our curriculums. But what will be happening this year, the guidance curriculum, the physical education, health and wellness program, art and music are going to be entering that first phase of program review.
Okay.
And that begins with an assessment of where we are. But the reason I noted particularly 9 through 12, if you recall during those conversations or discussions the board engaged the community in with the breathalyzer, we received a lot of commentary of rather than taking a punitive approach, we ought to be focusing more on an educational approach. When we examined and looked at where our kids at the high school are getting exposure, it you know, became clear that as a result of the way we're delivering health education at the high school, our students are not getting health education awareness, particularly in these areas of alcohol and substance awareness, on an annual basis. So what we're going to be looking at is, is there another way, is scheduling-wise, can we do something with health to ensure it happens that way? If not, can we take portions of that program and ensure that it's infused in some other part of a mandatory annual, whether it's English, whether it's the social studies, something in health or science, to ensure that we create more time on task on an annual basis. And that was in response to, I think actually the board had kind of thought that that's something that recognized that we need to look at. So, but it is part of the overall review of the entire K-12 phys ed program, health program.
Okay.
My questions were answered.
Michael?
Just to refresh me, yes, we've made it to phase 5 on math, And that's, you know, at the end you're kind of developing and assessing and seeing what kind of revisions you might need.
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
Well, yeah. The idea behind that, as you get to that, the last phase is kind of evaluation maintenance. And one of the things that Dr. Greger and I have been speaking about is just looking at more metrics of evaluation that we can apply to the whole evaluation process. But the design behind that is most school districts will do an implementation of a new curriculum, and then there's no follow-up. And what happens over time, back to that point about articulation, just by the natural process, all of a sudden, you know, science is always a great example at the elementary level. When you had the FOSS kits, when you first implemented them, everybody had these fresh kits, and all of a sudden, we don't have the same materials, and teachers have to go out on their own to you know, provide the supply. And then all of a sudden, just simply because either the principal or the teachers want to ensure kids are getting an infusion of it, they may go off course from that program that we have established. So the idea behind this five-phase cycle is that there's a constant reviewing of our curriculums at these different stages. So we want to ensure that every one of our NIAC curriculums, each and every year, is at one of those phases. And the idea is to ensure that there is continued coordination, continued articulation, so that the taught curriculum is aligned to the written curriculum, and they are aligned to the assessed curriculum. And schools are not typically, if you look at school curriculums and delivery of instruction, you see a lot of misalignment. And the idea is that it stays in front and center, so it's constantly this renewal process. That's what we're gearing for. So the idea is, as a result of the fact that we've been very true to that, those phases with mathematics, which is the first one we worked on, you know, when I first arrived at a district, we're not going to have to do a major revision of the program. It's really just taking a look at it. What state is it in? Are the materials we're providing relevant? And there's been constant issues and tweaking that have been occurring over that whole time. But the idea is so that we don't get too far off track to where we have to really start from scratch and really do an overhaul of a program. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is a board thing, it would be my interest to sometime just get an example of one of that misalignment you're talking about, and then the alignment, just to have a perspective on how that direction happens.
Well, I'll give you a quick example. I mean, I can tell you when I first came into the district, I can recall walking into Upper NIAC and seeing a specific reading program, Super Kids, that was only specific to Upper NIAC. It was not at the time really being implemented in your other school. You had a different approach in one school and a different approach in another school. There was no real, in fact, by the way, it was presented to me that was kind of by design, that it was kind of, you know, there was a time when site-based management was in vogue, and decisions were very often made in a school community, you know, at various levels. But it breaks down very quickly as the kids get into the middle school when you have kids coming from different areas. So that's just an example of a kind of misalignment where you just either have different materials or different frequency of time dedicated to certain subject areas and things. So that's, you know.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So my question then, in follow-up to what you said, okay, you finished phase five of math. You're going to go back to phase one?
What you do is, you cycle back to phase one, which is a basically kind of an audit of where we are. What does it look like? What audit look like? Because by the time we get to that, by the way, New York State may be, you know, Common Core may be long gone, and we may be onto, you know, some new core standards or something. Just your materials themselves, you know, sometimes do evolve. So it may be a very simple process, but it may also raise some large questions that have to be addressed.
Okay. Is the connected math still part of the phase the middle school?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because in kind of dovetailing with what you shared with us and what Michael was mentioning, I had this kind of casual conversation with a physical therapist strictly about the math and the math curriculum. So if you're doing connected math and you started in the middle school, right, is that where it starts?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's great because that's all you know. But if you've kind of come up with a different type of math curriculum, then
the connected math is very much tied to investigations and state modules at the elementary school. So there's not a real big disconnect from that. And all those obviously have been aligned to the Common Core standards in terms of shifting of different standards.
Okay.
Are we still doing curriculum instruction?
Yeah.
Do you have any other?
Just you, Dr. Montesano, you had kind of clarified something for me is how the cell, as you call it, the social emotional learning, which is in curriculum and instruction, there's a kind of an overlap with student learning in terms of the emotional empathy piece. But you did clarify that for me. Mm-hmm. In the EdWeek article that you had sent to the entire board. So as part of the guidance, socio-emotional is going to, in terms of that, is being addressed, but that also kind of overlaps into student learning in terms of the peer mediation, perhaps?
What we're going to be looking at with the guidance program is the American School Counselors Association does have a set of standards that it recommends, and that is directly focused on social-emotional skills, beginning at the kindergarten level and evolving. So that's one of the things we're looking at. And my intention with some of that information from that Stanford study that was in the EdWeek article is to share that with Dr. Gregory and Lorraine Long, who will be involved in the committee structure. And that's something that the committee will look at, those kinds of things. And again, the first stage is to look at NIAC, because we don't really have a comprehensive K-12, you know, curriculum that focuses on these things, as you know. But we do have a lot of activities in the district that are happening, and the idea now is to see what do we look like now. That's that auditing piece, and then start building on what ought it, you know, what, how should it ought to look like, a bona fide, effective program focusing on social and emotional skills. And that evolution of creating that vision comes from looking at research articles, looking at other district programs. One of the things that the consultant with the guidance provided Judy Wilson when she came to you was in that report were a number of districts that she considered to be kind of lighthouse districts that we ought to take a look at in terms of some of their curriculums and programs. So that's another charge the committee will take into consideration as it starts to do its work.
Well, I was excited about that article that it specifically honed in on reducing suspensions, and it was tied to social-emotional learning, and it was tied to how different students are viewed from a social-emotional aspect. So that,
well, as you know, there's a component of, you know, with that approach is teacher training.
That's what that's where I was going with that. So the curriculum
developing their own empathy, or you know, for students and how they approach the students, rather than developing skills and social-emotional for students.
Exactly. So that'll be part of this whole curriculum and instruction. Okay, that was it. Thank you.
Just two things. One, I thought the financial literacy thing, without knowing the context of it, sounded fantastic. My mind immediately shot to being a freshman in college and not really understanding the impact of what it meant to get a credit card application and the free spending that goes along with it. So if that's part of it, then it sounds fantastic. The other comment, and I'll defer to you, Dr. Montesano, and this isn't the appropriate forum, but I had a question just regarding curriculum and ELA, in particular script and cursive. I haven't seen it being taught. And as an attorney, I have a serious problem with that, whether it's the signature on my driver's license or a last will and testament or a social security card.
Yeah.
How do these kids learn how to make their mark?
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation.
My kids
to have. And I
my
can
kids
share
print,
with
they
you,
don't.
You know, from the school's perspective, that there was a time, if you roll back the clock, probably about five, maybe even a little bit more years ago, the district did in fact have workbook types of things that focused specifically on cursive writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically I'll tell the evolution, and I can share with you now that while some of our schools and classrooms, typically it's in third grade, have some materials we'll spend some time on, it's one of those if we have time focuses. And the reason for that, and let me just share with you, is severalfold. And just in terms of why it's kind of disappeared from, not just in NIAC, I can share you across this country, you will not find, most districts that have held on to it, which tend to be parochial schools in particular, have held on to it from the idea of tradition. We've always done this, and the beauty of writing, you know, nice thank you cards and things of that sort. But the fact of the matter is, the state of New York, as many standards states, have adopted the Common Core standards. In the ELA standards, cursive writing is simply not a standard. The problem your staff has is you now have an issue of return on investment and cost benefits of time. Mm-hmm. You talk to any elementary principal, any elementary teacher, I'm sure they would like to do a lot of things in their curriculum programs. But if you take a look at the standards themselves that have to be implemented in a typical third grade classroom, there's not enough time in a 100-day school year to be able to get deliver those types of curriculums that teachers, by the way, are now being charged with, not just ensuring kids have it, but performance is being measured about whether or not your kids, you know, can demonstrate that, that form of learning. Beyond that, there, you know, those that have proponents for cursive writing typically will give you information about, you know, cursive writing assists kids with overall communication and reading development, fine motor skill development. There doesn't seem to be a lot a body of research that demonstrates any real added benefit for kids. Any writing exercise kids have to do for state standard purposes, SAT purposes, whatever kind of writing they put down, whether it's manuscript or script, is going to be accepted. Most kids, the other argument for cursive writing sometimes is kids can be faster with speed. When we started getting into process writing, which was, you know, so far long ago, it was back when I was actually, I don't know if I was a school principal back then, but that was the days when we shifted away from, you don't see a lot of grammar being taught in school, you know, specifically isolated as a separate, you know, item. And process writing, the idea behind it, and there's some actually some body of research that suggests that you want kids to get content onto paper, to get their sloppy copy, their draft information. And writing a script actually slows that process down of getting information on the paper. Not to mention that, you know, some will argue that the only place that cursive writing, oh, this is contrary to your comment, is really even seen is in the hallways of school. That is kind of an obsolete, you know, invention in terms of kids, you know, in the outside world in terms of what they're going to be doing in their life. And so those are some of the reasons, but I'll share with probably the primary reason that you're not going to see it or don't see it in our schools is the amount of time on the elementary programming. You just, you know, it's a skill that does require a level of practice to, you know, to engage in. And by the way, I mean, we're actually now hiring teachers. When I give them writing samples, I don't think they've ever learned to write in you know, cursive writing.
Can I just say one thing? I actually wrote a long note to my daughter the other day, and she told me she couldn't read it because it was in script. And with a bad handwriting in script, they can't read it.
Well, look, just to cut to the chase, you know, if this Board of Education took a position to say we want cursive writing in our schools, we'll put it in tomorrow, but just recognize that it's going to be in place of something else that's going to be in the curriculum. We can't shove anything else in there. You know, maybe it can be in a club or extracurricular club.
I have a question, though.
Let me just finish. I mean, the generation now, they're all typing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, writing is, like you mentioned, pretty handwriting on a thank you card. Does anybody write thank you cards anymore? I mean, everyone sends emails.
You probably write me scripts.
I was not very good. I never got fine motor skills down.
You know, like...
I think it's interesting coming from the legal profession because I think what's happening is going to change the legal profession because you have to print your name, write your signature. And you know, and that's where I think a lot of this is going to happen.
And all of you recognize this. You know, there was a time in our society when written form of communication was all legal documents.
Right.
If you look back at your board minutes from, you know, way back, they were manuscript. And it was, you know, part of the business world. And that really is not the case where we are today. I would understand. I mean, I would, you know, I can't tell you that's not something that has some value to kids, but the primary concern we have is just that our curriculums cannot be all things, you know, and your primary responsibility is to deliver the program that is aligned to what the state requires you to do because you exist basically as a part of the state of New York.
So the answer is if you really want to homeschool your kids in cursive writing.
I remember Victoria, she's in 12th grade now. When she was in fourth, she was in the math class. It was either 3-4. Did you have Ada Sanabria? She started doing cursive, and I was like, oh, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
But she would be struggling to get it together, mm-hmm. and it was like maybe a month of it. But the point is, when we grew up, right, that's how I learned
to
write,
right?
So
print.
The practice, they didn't have to teach it, because the practice right. came with, that's how you did things, right?
I can't write, I write in block letters if I'm not going to write in cursive. Mm. That's like, my
I can't
mind's
really
just trained
well
to
either.
Continue.
Yeah, I could do, I tend to go more block now, but mm-hmm. but I can, but I just don't, I don't know. But I think the value in teaching it now, I've just seen it with the kids, they don't get enough time to practice, mm-hmm. and to the extent, how do you even test for that stuff anyway?
Well, look, the other thing, too, is,
to know that someone's learned. Yeah, like, my son has the worst handwriting in the world, so it was just going to look awful in script as well, so he's glad he didn't learn it. So it's just one of those things. No, truly, I don't get the value out of it. I don't know if...
I'm just going to scare the legal profession to say your signatures will soon be... barcode, eye print, or thumbprint.
I need to start from a tax standpoint, right? They already e-file, so you don't sign that. So it's basically I need to find a new job.
I was just going
to say. He's trying to save his profession.
We'll take you.
Forget about the kids. I need a job.
I just want to say I'm glad that you brought it up, Damon, because actually I think it is a this conversation just came up at a barbecue I was at this weekend.
Yeah.
So I do think it might be a conversation that some parents might be talking about. A couple parents brought it up. I'm glad you explained it the way you did. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah,
I don't
appreciate
really use
the,
it anymore.
I appreciate the indulgence. But I think it was good to get it. It's been bothering me.
Sure.
I'm glad that we clarified it. We can speak intelligently about it if the conversation does come up in the community.
But to Damon's point, I mean, you theoretically could take a few minutes and teach the kids how to do a signature.
Not a few minutes, that's your
signature.
No, just
to develop
it's
their
not,
signature.
It's not. No. To really learn to write in script.
No, I'm not saying write in script. I'm saying develop a signature.
My kids
signatures are going away.
This is my signature.
Yeah, my kids laugh at mine.
Yeah.
Am I going to teach my kids? My kid has looked at me. No, my kids have looked at me. Well, it's gone back. No, but why can't they? And what rule says it needs to be in this form?
Fair enough. I think actually James commented on my signature the last time and couldn't believe that it actually said anything.
So. Yeah.
That's a good point. I get it, but...
Maybe.
I don't know.
Touche.
All right. We indulged. So we moved on. Move on. All right.
Yeah.
Curriculum instruction. No cursive, sorry.
Cursive is that.
All right. As Ralph sat there smiling.
He knows.
All right, facilities.
I said his handwriting.
It's
cursive.
I'm sorry, can I just give you one comment? My grandmother once, she went to her doctor, and the doctor, she loved her doctor, and she scribbled something. And she's like, what's wrong with you doctors? You know, we can never read this. You have such bad handwriting. And she looked at her and she said, you know what? Good handwriting is the gift of a fool.
Oh.
So her point was,
so
who cares? And that was back in the day when it was all cursive. And it's like, it's not. I didn't happen to agree. But
let me just tell you, insurance companies spend a lot of money having nurses read those notes and print them out for us.
Talk to me 20 years from now. Facilities. We're not starting with Damon this time.
No.
You don't want the signs and script. That's E-Rock.
Barcodes.
Winter generated.
Sorry.
Facilities.
Facilities. Oh my. I have to get back on track here. Here we go.
Jen, anything on facilities?
Nothing.
No. All good.
All good.
No comments.
Anybody have anything on facilities? Terrence, just agree with us again.
I agree.
Good. You went. All right. Moving on. Community engagement. Damon.
I thought this one was good. I didn't have any comment on this.
Michael?
Website looks great. Logo looks great. Yep. Thanks for the plate.
Yes. Fabulous.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention
that. That's Ed Walsh.
I saw it when I came in. So,
The only thing I would say, I mean, this is good. I think we need to keep this in the forefront of our thoughts mm-hmm. because we still hear it all the time, that we need to be more transparent and communicate better. So to the extent that this goal is going to keep it focused, I agree.
Yeah, and just sort of tagging on to what Leanne said, I feel like one of the most important reasons for us to keep communicating is because, Dr. Montesano, you say such good things all the time, and people just, it takes a long time for them to hear it. No, it's like, you know, I'll be out, you'll be out socially talking to people, and they'll, you know, they'll ask, I don't know, just questions about tracking and honors classes and things. And there's just so much frequently misinformation out there. And I always, like, I enjoy being able to say, actually, let me tell you what Dr. Montesano tells us all the time, and trying to sort of reiterate what you share with us in board meetings. And it's really fun to do because, you know, I'll realize that what you share with us, sort of the big thing is the vision that you have, our community members are so impressed when they hear about it. And I know you've done so much, the community forums that you're out there, there is a lot that you're doing, but just to continue to keep doing it. Like, even these polls, they're so good. You know, and I just feel like just people seeing these, whether it's, you know, I know you mentioned Twitter on there, these newsletters, it's just such good stuff that just to continue sharing in all these different ways that you put on here.
Thank you. Love it, and I will just keep stressing to make sure we do not forget those who don't have the technology and striving to communicate, whether it's the public library or other community centers or NIAC centers. There are a lot of places where our community gathers, and we've just got to figure out ways to just keep posting information to make sure our folks.
One thing the district is very fortunate in having Lisa working with us is that she came from the ranks of Family Resource Center, and she's very sensitive to that issue. But you're right, we can't, you know, that's as we start to utilize, you know, Twitter or other things, is not lose sight of that. Not everybody is wired and connected. There's other ways in which we have to make sure we get the message out.
Well, Ms. Sonny, when I was at the I was in Boston this year. Did you ever we had a school board conference in Boston, the NISBA conference?
Yeah.
There were schools that were talking about technology, and some of the districts reached out to the community to get whether it was like a Verizon Wireless or someone to donate to homes to make sure that every home
had a district
had Wi-Fi access, internet access. Mm-hmm. So that might be something. I might have the name of someone. Maybe it's something. I'll do a little research.
I'd be happy to look into it.
Because it would. Sure. I thought it was just tremendous. And they said, well, you know, their technology plans were fantastic, but then there was an element of, and not just the communication, but just around those who would not have.
One of the things our community survey indicated is that the majority of our homes, families have smartphones.
Oh, yes.
And as an example, a new website, if you try it on your cell phone, it actually will come up. We're finding that's why we're kind of looking at even Twitter, because we think you'll hit a large portion. Mm-hmm. Not everybody may have, you know, a computer with internet, but it seems like the majority of parents do have cell phones.
That's a good idea. Excellent.
Good point.
But I'll have to see if I can remember where I got that information. I'm looking forward to that too. All right. The last one I had, I printed out district operation policy development. Anyone have a comment on this?
My favorite one.
Yeah, just curious to see the outcome of the two studies on suspension and rankings, along with liking to write in script. I also am a big proponent, old school, of rankings, and I'm just curious to see how things progress from there, whether it's, you know, we're seeing trends in getting rid of them or what. But I do like the idea of having a measuring stick or a measuring
so that I don't keep being a suspension too long. The ranking issue I can share with you. I'm actually very surprised that it has not really evolved in that. Maybe it has prior, but I can share with you from my time in Bergen County, as well as I've already done some preliminary surveys around us, and majority of districts have completely eliminated ranking. What they're going with is percentage. In Paramus, I can share with you, we dropped ranking. However, what we did was gave the students the option if they wanted on their transcript to send to colleges or not, or if they even wanted to know their ranking. I don't think there's a district in Westchester County that gives an actual rank. Majority of them give percentages. You're in the top 10%.
Top 10%, top 1%.
Here in Rockland County, if I recall correctly, I don't think I had every district on the CMO on Thursday, but I believe, if not all, majority of them have eliminated ranking. You know, you're number 5 or number 7.
They don't have the valedictorians and salutatorians.
The valedictorians are primarily still in place. If you've ever gone to the Lower Hudson Council valedictorian dinner. You'll see every district represented. What I will share with you, again, I'll just use my experience in Bergen County. There are districts that moved away from that. There are districts that have 7 or 8 of them. You know, they have different, you know, systems of looking at it. But I think this is an issue that, you know, certainly the board, needs to weigh in on. But at the same time, I also think it's something, this is where you want to hear from your parent community and our high school students. And I don't want to spend time tonight, but there, you know, a lot of the reason is really about the added pressure and anxiety of chasing the holy grail of a class rank, and then kids selecting courses that have a weight, because our courses do have different weights to them. So I'm going to take an AP course, not because necessarily I have a genuine interest in that course, but I know it's a weighted course. I know that teacher might give out better grades than if I have to take calculus AP. And then also kids that's loaded up with so many, of these intense courses that it does create this stress and anxiety. And if you haven't seen it, I'd love to have you watch that Scarsdale video that I sent.
It's wonderful.
Race to the Top was another video that's worth exploring. Because kids, particularly our competitive kids, and this had, by the way, has been a primary issue you'll see in your more affluent communities. But I will share with you, you do have a pretty good sized population of students that are applying to very competitive schools, as you mentioned earlier. So I can't say this is not an issue for you, but I will share with you, it's you know, a conversation worth having, you know, to explore it.
Any other comments on the operation?
I think we already addressed item number C in the earlier conversation, develop recommendations for changes to current practices of the OSS based upon best practices and research. I think you've kind of addressed that, because your indicator of success is a new suspension program.
Well,
because one of the things that, as a board, that would be helpful is not to have to review appeals to student suspensions. It would be like, we don't have to deal with that anymore, because, or less, because we're seeing less appeals, because we're seeing new programs that address OSS.
Yeah,
right,
well,
but wouldn't we still?
That's a tough one. Well, I mean,
based upon the cell information.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, parents always have access to appeal. I'm
not obviously,
saying that.
Yeah.
What you're saying is you want parents to see the value of the discipline, so they're not looking at suspension as just punitive and, you know.
Well, it's develop recommendations. This is your goal for changes to the current practice based upon best practice and research. Some of the research is a Stanford study around.
But just to be clear, you know, my interest here is to develop a suspension, or actually, you know, part of our code of conduct program that will shift the focus on punishment more towards some value-added experience of, you know, reflective peace.
I see.
But I cannot promise you that, nor do I think our measurement ought to be whether or not parents are satisfied with whether or not we gave kids suspension, because that's a tough threshold to, you know, for us to hit. But what we're interested in is looking at, for most of our kids, you know, we suspend students and they're, you know, they do get to Project Connect, which is just really primarily about homework and, you know, making sure they're kept up with their studies. But we don't spend a lot of time for them to reflect about what their behavior was and goal setting and things of that sort. And there's not, in other words, that, you know, what parents object to is, what, you know, you keep my kid out for 5 days, what, you know, what value does that have? Does that make him, particularly, you know, when you, if a student cuts school and you suspend them, that never seemed to be really be a rational, you know, logical.
But Jim, isn't the point here that there's still suspension? It's just what you do during that suspension differs.
Of that time away from the high school.
Right, but it's still a suspension.
Absolutely.
So I would imagine you would still have parents coming and saying, because the reason they fight it is because they don't want it on the transcript, right? For the
Correct.
Most part. Right?
Or that
now,
might
we're not putting it on.
Or the kid said he didn't do it.
Right,
well,
my kid didn't
one
do
of those
it, right?
Two
so
extremes,
it, yeah. The suspension, the thing called a suspension is not changing. It's how they fulfill the suspension. That's changing.
But also keep in mind, you know, parents also, this is not a whole lot different than you folks as parents, you know. Mm-hmm. How many times have you disciplined your kids and they tell you you're being unfair,
right,
or you're too harsh with what you've come up with? And we did that with parents, right, where they rationalize behavior. It's, you know, the bottom line is you have a code of conduct, and you have your code of conduct calls for suspensions under certain conditions, and different forms of all I'm saying with this proposal is that we examine the suspension experience,
yeah,
so that it has some value-added component is our goal, yeah, you know, rather than just stay away from us and come back and be fixed. You know, don't do it again.
So not to reduce the number of suspensions, just what you do.
No, I think they're somewhat correlated, only because you have reviewing student suspension data. Part of that data is grade levels, offenses, repeat offenders, race / ethnicity, and gender. Mm-hmm. So in that overall review, you're going to look at all of those factors, and looking at those factors and incorporating, quote unquote, the empathetic mindset may in fact reduce even the amount of suspensions that you have.
Right, but I don't think you can put that as a metric as something to achieve, right? Indicators of success, right?
Implementation of the suspension program.
No, I can do that. So I hear you. It may well do that, but I'm not so sure he can set his critical success factor
on that reduction
metric. Right, saying, what is it? You're going to say, I'm going to reduce it? I'm going to reduce it by X?
No, he's not saying that. He's saying the suspension program. It could lead to a reduction, simply.
Potentially.
Well, by the way,
agreed.
I'm not stating that it should be a goal. I'm saying, as an implementation of a new program, one of your outcomes may be a reduction, because an empathetic mindset, teachers may suspend less, students may feel more understood.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a byproduct of the new program.
Our suspension rates in the district, by the way, have been drastically reduced overall. We went up a little bit last year in middle school, but overall, we've been on a downslide. And I really credit the administration and the type of culture and environment they've created, PBIS, et cetera.
Just in the talking about implementing a new suspension program, you know, this is something that exists and I'm missing it, or it's something outside the box. Is there any reason to examine the idea of somebody gets suspended because of an infraction of the code of conduct, but in the suspension there's something built in that they can achieve some kind of level so that the suspension gets taken off the record?
Well, believe it or not, we do that. Actually, I've done it this year. In fact, Mr. DeMarco has been involved with us. We've had several students that ended the year with suspensions that had to be served into this year, and they were long-term suspensions for, you know, some serious infractions. And we created, in concert with Ralph, a stipulation settlement that's involved allowing the students to re-enter at an earlier time frame than the superintendent's hearing, with a number of contingencies, which did include things like community service, they remain in good standing, some instances maybe counseling outside of school, or routine visits with your guidance department, you know, guidance counselor. So we've done those things with us already in the district.
Yeah, just because I think one of the things we're talking about is having parents come to appeal these things, and if there's a consequence, if there's a consequence that we're imposing that also has a benefit that the parents might perceive to having the suspension, that there's an achievement level that you can reach that the district is satisfied with, that the suspension can be removed, parents might be more on board to saying, look, here's the consequence and you have to live with it, but it's not going to be on your college record, so get going and do the thing.
Yeah, the only thing I
Because that's what they care about, is the college record.
The issue with removal, you know, we'll have to examine that, but you know, one of the things that always pops up when you make arrangements as a part of routines that, you know, this will go away if you do this, is always going to be the fairness level.
Mm-hmm.
And a student may be motivated to do those things, and in part it may be simply because of the parental support that they're getting, where other students that lack those parent supports don't have the same access to it. So we just have to really look at it in its totality.
I think that's a good point, but maybe there's a way to figure that out.
Why it's we're going to examine it.
All right, any other comments? I think these are really great goals, and the fact that we spent close to a real hour discussing it, I just want to thank everybody for, you know, the really great input and discussion that we've had. So what I'd like to ask, I think there weren't any changes noted, so I'm going to ask for a motion to approve as an action item, so we can approve it now or we can add it. But I'm just going to take the action now.
Mm-hmm. Do you move to add it as an action item instead of the workshop item?
So I'm going to ask for a motion to move it to an action item for approval this evening.
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? We'll move that to
general.
Action general. Okay, and I'll put it as item 3.8.
Yep.
Okay. Action item general. Are there any citizens' proposals, questions, and concerns on any of the action items? No? Do we have a motion to accept action items 3.2 to 3.7 and the new 3.8, which is the district goals for approval this evening?
Before you take that motion, I just wanted to make a comment because I actually had to read back some of the minutes and read like the board comments section. I have to, Linda, give you a lot of credit because she summarizes some of the verbose comments very, very well. So thank you. I was like, oh yeah, there was a whole bunch of stuff said and she just nailed it. So thank you very much for the minutes. There's a lot there.
Good, thank you. Do we have a motion to accept item 3.2 to 3.8?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
Just that I appreciated this very exhaustive examination.
Yes.
It was great.
Yeah, that's good.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries.
Goals are approved.
Goals are approved, yes. That's
good job.
Good job, Jim. Thank you. Do we have a motion to accept business action items 4.1 to 4.3?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Dr. Montesano, anything you care to call out on personnel this evening?
No, not at this time.
Excellent. Do we have a motion to accept action items 5.1 to 5.18?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? Motion carries. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second.
We are adjourned.